Hello and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast on CelticUnderground.net. I'm Harry Brady and this is podcast number 255. In my 40 years of supporting Celtic, and particularly, not so much in the recent past, however, predominantly in those 40 years, our defence has been well nicknamed as the Sieve. There can be fewer more nerve-shredding principles than going into the last 5 to 10 minutes of a European tie knowing that all we need to do is just not concede a goal and we're through. However, that's what we did. Let's see what the draw brings this week for our final game. What the result this past 2 weeks has meant is we've got European football till Christmas. So, brilliant. Anyway, enough of my rambles. We're here for the Celtic Underground podcast, and this week it's St Anthony, and this week he once again is joined by a former Celtic player. This time it's Mr. Joe Craig. Joe Craig was a forward who played for Celtic for a couple of years in the late 1970s. He played 55 games in the hoops, scoring 23 goals. He was previously to that at Partick Thistle, but with the arrival of Billy McNeil, his days were numbered and he moved on. If you're looking for an excellent trivia quiz question, Joe Craig is the man to do it, because the question is, who scored a goal for Scotland on his debut? In fact, you may want to chip in his only game for Scotland. And he scored the goal before he'd ever kicked a ball for Scotland. And it's Joe Craig, because he came on, corner kick to Scotland, scores a goal with his header. Anyway, enough of me. I want to get this podcast out quickly so that you can continue listening to this Celtic chat after an excellent victory in Europe. This is me, Harry Brady, passing over to the young and fine St Anthony. With him, Joe Craig. Oh, and I must add that Mr. Craig is not a mind reader, or from his avid listening of the Celtic Underground podcast, know exactly what the first question is, but the recording of St Anthony didn't work for the first few seconds, so it starts off with Mr. Craig answering the usual question of, what was your first Celtic game?
First game that I went to was, I think my mum took me when I was about 4 or something like that. That would be Alloa versus Stirling Albion, local derby at Recreation Park. I don't think I seen Maystead, because I think I was playing with pals, to be perfectly honest. I was more interested in running the boot, playing. When I was young, I never watched a lot of football. I'd rather play it. I mean, my brother, who's 4 years older than me, he would go with my mum. My dad didn't go to a lot of the games. In fact, my dad only seen me playing once, ever.
In your entire career?
In my career, eh? My dad, aye. No, he didn't like the football and that, like, and he's just that he was always working, and he would prefer on the Saturday to go and play bowls with his pals.
Was he in Scotland game or something?
No, I'll tell you, it was a Partick Thistle reserve game, and we played, I was 17, 18 I think it was, and it was one of my first games or second games going to Parkhead, and it was Partick Thistle reserves against Celtic reserves. But Celtic had something like 6 internationals, didn't it? Wee Jimmy played, Jimmy Johnson played, Betty Hall played, John Clark played, I think John Hughes played. I mean, you looked at your team sheet, and I think your coach at the time, Dave McPallon, just went, good luck. Mm-hmm. And we actually beat them 6-5. We beat them 6-5, and I scored a hat-trick. And it was just one of these games. I mean, I meet guys years and years, I mean, that, you're talking nearly 40 years ago, and I can still remember meeting boys who played in that game, who still talk about it, because it was one of the games, 1-0, 1-each, 2-1, 2-each, and it went all the way, it was 5-each, I mean, 5-5, right, be about a couple of minutes to go, and I just hit this thing for about 35 yards, I think I just closed my eyes, and it flew right into the top corner, and it was 6-5, and the referee blew his whistle. And it was just one of these fantastic games, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the only game my dad ever seen me play.
So, it'd be your first hero, who would that have been?
My first hero was, believe it or not, was Jimmy Greaves. We obviously, with television then, Scottish players, I would say obviously we had like Dennis Law and Jim Baxter, who were fantastic. We Jinky, the Lisbon Lions. When I was just a kid, I kind of grew up watching the Lisbon Lions. Lisbon Lions were always just absolutely brilliant. We had great teams and great Hibs teams, great Hearts teams, great Rangers teams. There were great games at that time. But the best goal scorer that I seen at that time would be 60s, early 70s, was Jimmy Greaves by far.
That would have been the advent of Match of the Day and
Absolutely.
Seeing games in the
Houston,
telling you.
Absolutely. I mean, Jimmy Greaves very, very rarely scored a goal outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
And what he used to do, he never shot the goals. He never shot the ball into the goals. He just passed the ball into the goals. He used to just pass the ball by the goalkeeper. And it made it look that simple. But it's like everything else. All good players make things simple. I mean, I've been lucky in my career to play with some great players. And it's been an honour for me to do that. But when you see how good they are, you realise how, well, not how bad you were, but how good that they were. I mean, up here, up brain-wise, they're just in a different sphere for everybody else. And that's what makes them different. Their quickness of thought, and how they see things before it happens, or what I suppose you put them like snooker players. When snooker players hitting the ball, he's thinking two shots in front. Great players are the same in football. They're thinking, if I do this, I'll go there and I'll get that. They're away in front of you. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. When you play with better players, it's easier to become a good player yourself because they help you. And it's not until you actually... And I was lucky enough for two or three seasons to play with some really, really good players. And when you come back doing, you realise how good they were and you didn't really appreciate them at the time. But Jimmy Greaves for me was just an absolutely fantastic finisher. And he was a small lad, he was quick, and he was a lefty. But he used to just amaze me how he used to just score for goals.
Did you model yourself on him in particular?
No, really. I mean, at that time there was plenty. I mean, when I grew up, we were actually quite lucky we centre forwards. I mean, in my era when I played, there was Joe Jordan, Andy Gray. Andy Gray's one of the best headers of the ball that I've ever seen. For a small guy, because he's no big, and he's just bordering probably on 6 feet, but his standing jump was fantastic. Derek Johnson, Derek Parlin, Ian Wallace. I mean, these were all great players that all played up front. Graham Sharp, he was a wee bit younger than me, but there was a lot of good centre forwards going to be at that time. So when I was at Celtic and you weren't getting picked for the Scotland squads, you were saying to yourself, well, at least it's half decent players that's keeping you out of it.
The quality was much better than things are.
Absolutely. So, I mean, modelling yourself on somebody was really difficult. My brother, Nicol, who was 4 years older than me, was at 16, 17, is probably one of the best players I've ever seen. He signed with Rangers when he was a kid at 16. And he was one that I kind of looked up to as a big brother, but he was just a fantastic player. But a bad injury put him out. He had a really bad knee when he was 17 and never got the chance to play. But he played in Scotland under-17s at that time, and they went down to Kettering to play England, and they beat them 5-0, and he scored the 5 goals. I mean, that's how good he was. He was just a good player. So we were all kind of gutted.
What position was he
in? He was a centre forward.
He was centre as well.
But he was bigger than me,
mm-hmm.
and lazier than me. He wouldn't run that much. I would run quite a lot to chase lost causes. He liked the ball in his feet, and he didn't like running about too much. Yeah, but when you gave the ball his feet, he was just a quality player.
So how did you end up at Partick Thistle then?
Well, David McParland actually stayed in Oliver, and he knew my mum and dad, and obviously he knew my brother. My brother kind of opened doors for me, because what happens is when somebody's a half decent player, all the scouts come and watch him. And the inevitable is he got a younger brother, right? So, I mean, because I was 4 years younger than him, I knew a lot of the scouts. I knew the Rangers scouts. I knew the Celtic scouts from the Aloha because they knew my brother. And they were always kind of watching me. And to be fair, I mean, I wasn't interested in signing for anybody. I just wanted to play football. And it was David McParland who came to my mum and dad's house and sat down and talked to them. And like I say, I was 15 at the time, and playing with Socky, juveniles under 16s at that time, and he wanted to sign me. And to be fair, I was like, well, Partick Thistle, who are they? They're a Glasgow team. I mean, I just wanted to play.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, we'll sign you on a provisional contract and we'd like you to play with Soccer Juniors. Well, that's where I was going anyway.
Mm-hmm.
After the under-16s, I wasn't going to go to the 18s. Jimmy Miller, who was the manager at Soccer Juniors at the time, was a good friend of Davey. And the rule was at that particular time, if you signed anybody in that area, like the Stirlingshire or Clamarnockshire area, they went to one or two junior clubs as you were kind of farmed out.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of farmed out to Soccer, but that was my local club anyway, and I was quite happy to do that. So I had 2 year junior football, and I loved it, absolutely loved it.
And you were quite fortunate at Thistle, because at that time they had a wonderful youth system.
Well, David McBain started it all. I mean, everybody in Maryhill, you always get, and I've been told this with Glasgow boys, and I've seen it myself, like, you've got loads of people who stay in Maryhill who are Celtic supporters, Rangers supporters, or they're Celtic Partick Thistle supporters, or Celtic Clyde supporters, or Rangers Partick Thistle supporters. So when Rangers are playing at home, or Celtic will play at home, they'll go see Rangers and Celtic. And because they couldn't afford to go away home, away from home, they came to watch who was closest to Partick Thistle or Clyde. And to be fair, at Maryhill, we always had a good home crowd.
It was a community club
at that time, and it was we had the Rangers, Celtic, Partick Thistle supporters there. So I mean, well, it was a bit of a quandary for them, and we actually played at home against Rangers and Celtic, but we always got 40,000 people there. I mean, it was mobbed, yeah. And as usual, the Glasgow supporters are no longer letting you know what side of the fence is sitting and what they think of you. So it was a good toughening up thing. But David McParlin started a youth development probably around about 1968-69, where he kind of got rid of all the older players. Partick Thistle, I think, was used at that particular time in the late 60s for older players retiring, guys who had half decent careers and then coming to Partick for the last couple of years. Davey had went down to Largs and he was involved with the SFA coaching. He was an excellent coach, and what he decided to do was just keep two of the experienced players and just make the rest up with kids, and it was just brilliant. I mean, he built an absolute fantastic team.
There was two sort of waves of players. The first wave would have been Ruff, Clavin, McQuaid, that ilk, who won the League Cup, and will always be remembered for that.
Yeah.
But then just shortly after that, it was guys like you and Alan Hansen. Who would the other ones be?
Well, Morris Johnson, mate. Mo came along later on after
Brian
that.
Brian Whitaker, Jim Merrill,
that's right. Duke Somners, Andy Anderson. I was quite fortunate because the year after they won the League Cup in 71-72, I went straight into that team. I got called. I was me 17 at the start of that year, and myself and Danny Gelligan, who was a left back, got called up. And it was quite fortunate for me, because in the September, I think it was, Jimmy Bone got sold to Norwich, and I went right in. So that was me. I had some in my first year there. I'm sure I had some like 16 starts, which for a 17-year-old kid, You didn't get that, do you? I mean, you maybe get half a dozen stars, but I had 16 stars. And I think overall I had about 24 appearances. It was quite a lot for a kid. And I think I scored 10 or 12 goals. I actually did all right. But to go into that team, like you said before, Big Ruffy was in goals. John Hansen was a right back. Alec Forsyth was left back, who actually went to Man United. You had Ronnie Gladden and Alec Gray in the middle of the park. Frank Coulson up front, Dennis McQuaid, Johnny Gibson, Bobby Laurie. We had good players.
They were good players.
We had good players. And I think at one time we had something like 7 or 8 internationalists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember that Alan Hansen, I went to school with Big Alan, he's only a year younger than me. So his older brother, John, was right back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John was an international as well. So when Alan turned 17, there was always a debate about whether he was actually going to be a professional football player or a professional golfer, because he was an excellent golfer, and he still is an excellent. I think Alan plays off with one or two now, but he used to be a scratch golfer. And I think the reason was that he could never win his local tournament. He could never win the local tournament. I think he was in it 3 years in a row and he couldn't even win.
Fate's a funny thing.
Aye, but so he decided to go to full time. But the time, I hadn't seen Alan for about a year and a bit, but the time, what had happened, he was always tall. But what happened in that year, he'd grown physically. He'd matured. This guy who turned up at Partick Thistle was like, for goodness sake, look at the size of you. You're huge. He was big, and he was solid, and his pace, he was really quick.
He tended, my recollection is Alan Hansen being a midfield player at that point. Yeah. He was, everybody remembers when he went back to play soccer for Liverpool, but how did you find him as a player? Could you see him being as good as that, what he became?
Alan always had talent, always had unbelievable ability, but he was very lazy. As a kid, I mean, at 14, 15, he was a midfield player, and he played in the midfield all the time. I never seen him play anywhere else. Absolutely unbelievable on the ball, but wouldn't run to hear he was lamppost to go and get it. Very, very lazy. And everybody just thought that, he's got all the skill in the world. And to be fair, he wouldn't put his foot in a tackle. Mm-hmm. He would leave that to somebody else. He always thought that was somebody else's job. You tackle, give the ball to me, and I'll go and do my thing. But what happened in that year and a half, 2 years, he changed. He became physically strong. He started tackling. He started winning balls in the air, and you're just thinking, who is this guy? Mm-hmm. This guy's, where's the old Alan Hansen? Mm-hmm. Where is he? What have you done with him? And what happened was David McBarron put him in almost straight away. But he cost us so many goals because Alan would never just kick the ball away. He would always like do a little feint, a little pass. Mm-hmm. He would take the ball in any condition, anywhere in the park. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people used to panic in the 18-yard box. Big Alan would be nutmegging people and this kind of carry on. So he made a lot of mistakes early doors. But we had no doubt in our mind, watching him at training and watching him playing, what just quality player. He was the best at 18. He was the best centre half in the league. In the first division at that time, no Premier, well, you call the Premier League the first division. He was the best centre half in the league by far. Mm-hmm. But because he was a traditional great big lad who won booting and chipped centre forwards on the track and that, he was a different kettle of fish altogether. And people at Partick, the players we played with, and people would say, who's your best player? And they'd go like, Alan Hansen. They'd go, for that, he's too soft, he's run down to the door. He's a player. And it wasn't until he actually left. I mean, he looked what the kind of career did he go, what?
Phenomenal, wasn't it?
3 European champions, 6 winners' medals, 4 or 3 FA Cup medals. Unbelievable.
So, Davy McParland moved on, and Berry took over, very old. Yeah. You must have some memories of Berry.
Everybody's got a story for Berry. I mean, Berry was completely different from what Davy was, but they both had their unique ways of putting it over, where Davy was, Davy could get in your face and give you the hairdryer all the time and that, but Berry would give you all the time. I mean, he liked confrontation. He loved, that's the way Berry was. And it was a kind of culture shock, they having Davy McParland for a young kid like me. I'd be 19 or something at the time, seeing this man coming in, this veteran, this icon, the Lisbon Lion coming in, and in your face, and wanting to fight with everybody, and looking at things, and shouting at people, and you're like, well, for goodness sake, what's going on here? It was completely different. And to be fair, a lot of young players, and myself included, in that, we didn't like him much. Mm-hmm. We didn't like him that much, because we thought he was a bully. But what he did, he did toughen you up. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the process as well. You've got to be able, it's okay taking the accolades and people who are saying nice things about you, but you can't go in the huff and start hiding and disliking people if they're saying bad things about you. Right? They're saying bad things about you for a reason, because they maybe see something in you that they want to get out. Mm-hmm. It's not just a matter of going and slagging people off or being really, really difficult with people. They want to try and get the best out of you, but it's not until you get older that you start to realise that. I mean, I was lucky that when I was at Partick, I didn't particularly like Berry that much. But when I came back up for down south, and he was manager at Hamilton. I worked with him again when I was older then, and I was on part of the coaching team. He was fantastic with me. He was absolutely brilliant with me. He told me a lot of things, he showed me a lot of things, and he was really, really good with me. And I'll always be grateful for him, because he put me on a kind of a path that if I was going to go into coaching and management, I got a lot of really good information and insight off of Berry Auld. He was a great guy to me.
Well, when you were at Partick and Berry was the manager, you were getting under 23 caps.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've mentioned a few of your contemporaries at that time. It was Andy Gray's, Rolly Pettigrew's, Derek Parlines, who were all really good players. Mm-hmm. But you were right up there with him at that point. So were you hankering for a move at this stage? Did you ever think, I'll need to move on here for you?
Well, no, I mean, I was quite happy at Partick. The only thing I didn't like about it at that particular time was that I was part-time. Mm-hmm. I went full time for a year, but I didn't particularly like it, because I wanted to go full time when I was 17, but David McPannon wouldn't let me, because I was a motor mechanic to trade.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, no, and he did this with all the kids, get your trade in first, then you can think about going full time. So I started my apprenticeship at 15, and when I was 20, I decided to go full time at Partick, and I didn't like it that much, so I went back part time, because I was getting married when I was 22, so I needed more money, because I was making more money part-time, basically what I was full-time. So I decided to go back part-time. But the move really came out of the blue. I was starting my sixth season with Partick, and I was working in a garage up in Bathgate. I just moved to, I'd got married, and my wife was working in St. Kent's and Blackburn in the school, and I was working at a garage in Bathgate. And I always remember this, it was a Friday afternoon about one-ish, and the boss came out and he goes, there's a phone call for you, some guy from Glasgow, don't know who it is. So I went, Glasgow? So I went to the neighbour, it was Berry Auld, and he said to me, is that you? And he goes, aye. And he goes, aye, it's me, boss. He goes, how would you like to move to one of the big two in Scotland? And I goes, oh, yeah, definitely. He says, well, get yourself right through here, pronto. And I goes, right, okay, boss. So I said to my boss, I need to go to Glasgow. Well, you can't, yeah. I says, I'm off, I'm gone. So I jumped in the car. I stayed in Armadale at the time. I thought, I had all my working gear on. Mm-hmm. I can't go like that. So I went home, got a quick shower, got changed. I must have been about like 5 seconds in the bag and then getting the shower and that, like, get changed. And I drove through Far Hill. Now, in all honesty, I didn't know
who it was.
If it was Jock Stein.
Or Jock Wallace.
Or Wally Waddle.
Or Wally Waddle.
Yeah, Wally Waddle. Right. And I thought, I'm not really bothered, to be perfectly honest. I don't bet it's Mr. Stein. Right. Because at that time, I fancied Celtic more than the Rangers, right? And so I got to Far Hill, and I met Bertie, and Bertie's like, there's a man in there I admire, so don't you muck him about. And I went, no, no problem. So I went through the door, and Mr. Steve was saying, he goes, I'm going to sign you, blah, blah, blah. I goes, just give me the contract. It's in that. It must have been about 30 cents. The money was even mentioned.
It's worthwhile pointing out here that Davy McPadden was his assistant.
Aye,
he became Celtic assistant.
But that was after. Davy had went from Partick to Queen's Park.
Mm-hmm.
He was manager at Queen's Park for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came. No, that's right, you're right. Mm-hmm. He went as assistant manager at the start of that year,
So what I was going to say is, do you think that was an influence? Do you think Celtic were on the lookout for a striker? So do you think maybe Davy pointed Jock in your direction? Because
I had had a decent season before that. I think I scored 22 goals or 20 or 21 goals or something like that with Partick, because I played up front with Dougie Songer, and Dougie Songer and I had a really good understanding. Dougie's one of the best players I've ever played up front. He was just fantastic, and the two of us hit it off, because I'm sure Dougie scored 20 odd goals that year as well. We were quite similar in the way that we played. Mm-hmm. And we were going really well with each other, and we started building up this relationship, and we scored a lot of goals. But football's like that sometimes, you've just got to be selfish and go. But you just can't turn the move like that, don't you? Just can't. Yeah, I was ready for it. Mm-hmm. I'd done my kind of apprenticeship, the 5 year at Partick, which was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Because at Partick, we had a lot of experienced boys. I mean, boys like Jackie Campbell and Hughie Strachan and Alec Forsyth. Jackie Husband was the trainer there, so we had a lot of good experienced guys running about the place just to keep your feet in the ground. But Partick was one of these things where is that you really couldn't get above your station because the boys just slaughtered you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they felt anybody was getting bully big time, they just slaughtered you and they brought you back down. So the players, I mean, we had a great social life at Partick. We were always out as a group, and I think that helped us. Again, a drop of your heart, we got your party. Yeah, who's having a party this weekend? Or somebody's used, and everybody would be there. Or it'd be a boys' night out, or some kind. It was just one of these things that most of the guys were really, really. And you got to remember, the majority of the guys were only maybe 2 or 3 years age difference. Mm-hmm. Apart from the 2 or 3 I've mentioned, the experienced boys, the rest of the boys were only 2 or 3 years apart. So it's not like you were getting 5 or 6 years apart. So they were all in that kind of party mood, let's go do and get a few drinks. Let's go to the dance and this kind of carry on. So we had a lot of social things, and that's what I liked about Partick, and I think that helped on the park.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, I suppose it's a bonding thing. I mean, that's why they take you away on these hill walks and hotels and everything, all these businesses, and build paper aeroplanes out of paper and all that kind of carry on. It's a bonding thing, and we had a lot of that at Partick. We didn't have so much at Celtic because I think what you had to do is realise that the difference between with Partick to Celtic, you had to watch what you were doing 24/7, especially off the park.
Mm.
On the park was what you were judged by, but you had to remember that everybody in Glasgow knew you.
Mm.
Everybody, there was no hiding place.
So you signed in the Friday, I remember this, because your first game was against Hearts at Celtic Park, and it was fairly late on in the Friday, and it came into the news. And you made your debut on a Saturday, and that must have been a big sort of culture shock. Get into that dressing room,
I'll tell you the funny thing is, when I went through the park and I signed in, when we went across the park, he'd got photographs done for the Celtic View. I had to then go to the SFA, so I had to follow Joe. He didn't say jump in my car, which was a big giant. And I had a wee helmet, right? He says, follow me to the SFA, which is kind of, yeah, Park Gardens. So he's doing the motorway up one way streets the wrong way, going about 90 miles an hour. My car's knackered and I can't keep up with him. So eventually he gets up there. Well, what I was going to say, when I came to Partick and I walked through the door, the very first person I met was Jimmy McGrory. He was standing, and Mr. McGrory was standing there, and I shook his hand and I just thought,
what's something else in it?
This man's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
There's photographs of him all over the place, can you? And you walk in, and the biggest legend of them all is standing there. And the first thing he says to you, "Hi, Joe, welcome to Parkhead. Welcome to Celtic Parkhead." Just like, you just kind of take it on. You look at it, and you just think, unbelievable. Yeah. And I think it's the shape. I say to people that you never realise how big the club is until you're actually there. Now, I played at Parkhead a few times at Ibrox, and big crowds and everything. You go in, but you sneak in, you go to the weight dressing room, you come out, you listen to the roar, and you just see green again. And what you do is you run about for 90 minutes trying not to get to do it, right? In fact, we actually drew once there, but we go beat 6-0 there, and Dixie scored 6 of the goals, yeah. And we didn't play that bad. 6-0 we're doing. But we went back to Farrell the year after that and beat them 2-0 at Farrell. That's what we were like. But when you walk into places, it's like, the only other feeling I got it was the very first time I walked into Hampden. When the hair's in your arms,
there's an aura about the place.
You walk onto the park, even though there's nobody there, all the ghosts are there, and the hairs in your arms start to stick up.
Mm.
And you feel this prickling in the back of your head. Going into Parkhead when you're an actual player. Now, it never really hit me. I met Mr. McGrory, signed the contract, we got the photograph to him. I went to the SFA, got ready to start, come back to Parkhead. Mrs. Dean says, "See you at 1:45 in the morning, don't be late." And he went away, and I was standing in the door at Parkhead, and there was nobody there. And I walked out and my mind looked at it and I thought, unbelievable. And I'm driving back in the car and you're thinking, phew, Celtic again. And it just doesn't seem real that you've actually signed for a club this size. So when you go in the next again day and you park, right, and you go in and when I went for Hull and you go in at 1:45, there's nobody about. You go in at 1:45, park heat, there's thousands of people. And obviously people are looking at you funny when you're going, what are you doing here? And the ones who obviously in the paper are
that's what you're saying.
They're just thinking, right, so you want to get in, yeah, because you didn't want to. Can you, when you say make an arse of yourself, but you just want to get in. So I was lucky, the first person I met was Ronnie Gladman. He says, like, come in, sit down. And going into the home changing room, it's weird. Because normally you'd go that way.
The Ronnie was your mate for
Phil Hull. Well, that's right.
It was good to have somebody there.
Absolutely. He was great. He was like my crutch. Kind of like coming here, this is where you'll change and this kind of carry on. Like,
then, and he'd have been 8 and you'd have been 9.
That's right. Yeah, so we kind of sat.
Sitting
there. Well, we were like 7, 8 and 9 because Ronnie was on one side of me and Kenny was on the other side of me. Right? So it just kind of worked out that way. And you're looking around about the place and you're looking at the changing rooms again. Andy Lynch, Big Shuggy, Johannes Edmondson, Danny, again, Big Roddy McDonald. And you're looking at these players and you're just thinking, these are all great players.
Well, you were the last bit of the jigsaw because Celtic didn't have a good season the season before that. And we needed to bolster the defence and he got Pat Snatton, who was a great sign. And it was felt that we had good attackers, but they were all a bit late. And you were there to lead the line in the old fashioned style. And you were an immediate success. Now, I'm happy to talk to you today because you, when you came to Celtic, that was the first period that I started going to games regularly. And the likes of you and Ronnie Glavin and Johnny Doyle Kenny. In fact, one of the best forward lines I've ever seen was Doyle Glavin, Craig Dalglish and Conn. And he's weren't there for long enough. It was dead sad because Kenny moved away, Alfie got injured, that kind of thing. And I think if they'd have stuck together with that it would have been something else. But the good thing is you're a success right away. And Derry Proven's got a saying that he always says is everybody's got a signature moment. And if you don't mind me saying so, that you did a lot of good things at Celtic, but that goal against Rangers.
Well, it was a signature point for me because it was two things, and I think I've said to you before that, and I tell everybody this was it was my first Old Firm game. It's a night game and it's at Ibrox. There was a night game,
eh? Oh,
aye.
They're called
night. So, I didn't care about the stats about our record at Ibrox was poor. I mean, it wasn't until after the game somebody said to me, that's the first time in 10 games that we've won here. Now, it was my, third game? Because my first game was Hearts, second game was Kilmarnock. Because we drew Hearts 2 weeks, didn't we?
Yes, he beat Kilmarnock 4-0.
We beat Kilmarnock 4-0, and I scored one goal in there.
That was your first goal.
That was the first goal. Come on, it was a touch for Heather Mingman. But we played really well. And it was a start, I think, that we come in. But going to Ibrox and winning was a major, I think, turnout for the season. And it was a big turnout for me. It was a big thing for me because, one, it was my first Old Firm game. And second, it was a goal that won the game. It didn't matter if you bat it in your backside or hits off the back of your heat, as long as it goes in and wins, right? And it's a winning goal. Because it was a half decent goal, it made it that much sweeter for the fans and for me. Because people remember the goal as being a good goal, but if it go beat 2-1, people wouldn't have remembered the goal. But they remember the goal because, one, we beat Rangers, and two, it gave us 3 points. Now there's a thing. The turning point I felt for the whole season was the Tynecastle game that we won 4-3.
That was the game that we were 3-1 down. Ollie Gibson scored a hat trick, and then the second, although you didn't score that day, you contributed. And I think in the last minute, Ronnie got the winner. So we did that. That was something that day.
And I tell people this at half time. We went in at half time and we're sitting in there in the dressing room. We're going, how are we getting beat 3-1? Because we've played really well. They've had 3 chances and scored. We actually barred them for 45 minutes and we're 3-1 at half time. And you're thinking, how are we getting beat? So Mr. Steen didn't have to have a big talk, because everybody's like, look, you just keep what we're doing and we'll win this game. We had no doubt in our mind that we could win this. But the pivotal point is when we went out, and across the other side with the cow sheds were all the Celtic supporters, all had their scarves up. There must have been 10, 15,000 of them. And they were all singing, "We Are Sailing."
Rod Stewart.
And I'm thinking, I'm walking out and I'm saying to everyone, look at them. We can be 3-1. And they're singing, "We Are Sailing." There's no fans in that. Other fans in the world would do that. Because normally when you came out and you're getting beat 3-1, you're getting dogs abuse. Can you get in, Ken? Come on, Ken, get into them, you're hopeless and everything. They're all singing, "We Are Sailing." And you just think to yourself, that's unbelievable. And I have no doubt that they fans won us the game that day. No doubt in my mind. And it changed my mentality about fans. Because we, as players, we all like hearing nice stuff about ourselves. We didn't like getting slagged off. We didn't like hearing the bad stuff. Nobody does. Everybody wants to get told how good a player they are. But you're not going to be everybody's cup of tea. I mean, if you've got 10,000 people there, you might have 8,000 that like you and 2,000 that dislike you, or vice versa. But you've just got to go and do your job. I mean, you take a dislike to somebody because they, some, I don't know, it could be anything, it could be his hair, the way he runs, or something like that. But your human nature is, not everybody will like you. So you can't expect to be, if you want to call it, loved by everybody. You've still got to go and have your doubters, or he's rubbish, this can he carry on, like. And you've got to be able to take that. But when you see this, it's just unbelievable. It's just unbelievable.
So later on in the season, Celtic signed Alfie Conn. And that was a huge signing at the time. So and I feel a bit of sympathy for Alfie, because given different circumstances, if he didn't get the injuries he had, he'd have been a Celtic great. Oh. Because what a player he was. Some of the things he could do.
Alfie was a fantastic person. He was a lovely, lovely man. And I go on really, really well with Alfie. And he was just a laugh. Alfie had a wee bit lucky go carefree kind of attitude, Ken. But that's the way he was. But put him on the back when he was dead serious. And he wanted to play. And Alfie had that wee bit difference that a lot of players didn't have. He had that wee bit edge to go by people, and that wee bit edge to get in the end of things and see things. And I was talking about the first thing. Alfie could see these things before they happened as well. He was quick up here. He was quick up top. And he was a joy to play with. He would work his socks off for you, right? But I don't think he liked any authority too much. I don't think he liked getting told what to do too much. He just wasn't a rebel, but if he didn't like you, or if he didn't like certain people, Alfie wouldn't hide it, but let's put it that way. He let you know that he didn't like you. And was that his downfall? I don't know. I mean, people are looking for perfect professional models who all like that. The guy who's on time all the time. The guy who never misses this. The guy who's that. The guy who's this, who's brilliant. Who's 100% there and 100% off the field. Sometimes you get players who are a wee bit, there's question marks on them. And sometimes you either accept them the way you are, or you let them go. And in Alfie's case, I think by that time Billy McNeil had come in, I just think the two personalities just didn't go.
It was a clash. But you were fortunate enough to play with Kenny and Danny when they were at their peak.
Yeah.
So playing with Dalglish must have been something else.
He was just a joy. He's the best player I have ever played with. He's the best player by far I have ever played with. Danny wasn't far behind it. But Danny and Kenny, because they played so long, used to have this kind of, it's like a telepathic thing. But my job is easy, because we played a basically a 4-2-4. But it ended up basically a 4-3-1 that kind of ended up, right? Where we had Doyle and Paul Wilson, who used to go wide, and they used to stay wide. Kenny used to just go and play anywhere in the middle of the park. Right? Roy Aiken or Tommy used to patrol that midfield. And my job, basically, when the ball came up, was keep it and get to Kenny. That was my job. That's all I did. Because when the ball came up, right, and you're facing away the goals, the first friendly face you see 9 times out of 10 was his.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was my job. My job is easy.
Mm-hmm.
The ball comes up, I fight the centre half for it. If I could take it to in line with the first person, 9 times out of 10 was Kenny. There the ball, and I used to just turn, run, go in the middle of the park, go in the goals. Because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
He would then do all his magic stuff. He would then do these passes or things across there. And that's all, it's just easy for me. Get the ball, get to me, I'll get to Kenny. Every time. That's all it was.
It sounds simple, but it was successful.
Well, it was successful.
Mm-hmm.
But Kenny used to do things like, Danny would get the ball in the right back, and I'd be looking maybe for the ball to get knocked in the corner, and then I'd look at Kenny, Kenny'd look at Danny, Danny would look at me, and he'd just go like that, be seeing Steve Muir, and I'd just go in, I'd just rotate the centre half in, and next thing Kenny would be up there, right? And it was one of these things that nobody showed us what to do. It was just things that Danny had said, well, sometimes when I get the ball, I'll look at you, and if I go like that, you go, and Kenny's going there, and everything. And I seen him doing a thing at Parkhead once, and it was just absolutely fantastic. And it just showed you the Kenny class this guy got. Danny's got the ball in the halfway line, the right back position, and I'm in the inside right position, facing Danny, about 20 yards out. And he's looked at me, and he's went like that with his head, and I've moved in, and Kenny is there. And he's ran into the hole that I've left, and Danny's chipped the ball. And as Kenny's ran, the ball's come over his shoulder, and he's caught it in the top of his right foot, and he's chipped it. It's been like that, and the ball's went like that. So the defender's run by, Kenny's got the ball, the ball's been like that, it's bounced, and as it's bounced, he's hit it with his left foot, and the ball's went like that, and it bounced on top of the bar. And I just thought, it's just sheer class.
What kind of captain was he?
Kenny wasn't a great captain. He wasn't a great motivator on the park. I mean, Roy Aitken was a better motivator. Pat Stan was a better motivator. They were better talkers. Kenny didn't talk to you a lot in the park.
Mm-hmm.
He just led. He would pass the ball, next thing, be in the net, and you go, where'd that go for you? Nobody seen it coming. Even the goalie never moved.
Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm.
That's how he led. He wasn't a great talker on the park. Well, Roy Aitken was a good talker in the park, and Pat Stan was an excellent talker.
Was he a big personality in the dressing room, Kenny? Or was he? You always get the impression about him
as
he's quite a,
what do
you say, a dull guy, but he's quite
inward. I don't know if you like me saying this about him too personal. What you see in the television is nothing like his personality.
Mm.
I think his personality is, can he, when he's on television, he's guarded. He's kind of, he's more carefree and laughing and joking than that, but I don't think you can do that when you're actually on national television.
No.
He's a nice enough lad, you know what I mean? But he's no what you would call a born leader. He's no one of these boys that will go up in the dressing room and say, right, lad, this, let's go and do this and do that. Roy Aitken would do it. Mm. Pat Stan would do it.
But did people look up to him least because of who he was?
Though? Oh, aye. Mm. Oh, aye. What he was, I mean, people appreciated Kenny because of the skills and the things that he could actually do on the park.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's there for everybody to see. I mean, and Kenny was consistent. Kenny would, I mean, I know there was people saying away back then he never played as well for Scotland as what he did for Celtic, but for goodness sake, I mean, he didn't do too bad for Scotland.
He didn't do too bad, but also remember my dad saying at the time, what sticks in my mind, that with the greatest respect to the other guys that were playing for Scotland, they weren't on his level.
Well, that's the problem. And to be fair, you're talking about a lot of good players.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he was that far in front of them in thought and skill.
But I think that's what Kenny, I mean, even when he went to Liverpool, he was in front of the other players.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you had great players that played with him as well, but I think Alan Hansen wasn't far away for that. Mm-hmm. Big Hansen could see that, because you very rarely seen Big Alan giving away a pass. Kenny would break forward,
yeah.
Simple pass, and he would go, well, I've done my bit, yeah, you go and do yours. Okay? And every now and again he'd have a marauder forward, because I used to see him when he used to come by me at forward, I used to go, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. You get back there, you'll get a nosebleed, you're far too far up the park. So if he came once or twice up the park during the game, it was once or twice too many, even though he scored a few goals. Big Alan was a defender, and he would make a pass, and if he felt like it, he would go and do it.
Mm.
Kenny was one of these boys who was a player's dream, because irrespective of where you were on the park, he would try and help you. He would take balls in bad areas.
Mm.
He would take balls bad balls and try and make them good balls. Right? He would work hard, and he expected everybody else from the boom to be as good or as work as hard as what he did. He was a crab at man sometimes, yeah?
I think what made him the great player that he was, some guys that can do great things in football, mm-hmm. right? They're fairly inconsistent.
Yeah.
Now, I remember one night you scored 4 against Airdrie.
Right.
And there was one that he's running in and goal. He drew the goalkeeper out, right? And he side-footed the union right. to goal. Now, to me, the really great players can play a simple ball.
Aye.
Whereas you get some guys who, I'm not doubting their ability, mm-hmm. but they don't have that in them just to lay a ball off.
One of my pet hates, and it's still a pet hate, yeah, is that when you see people coming in at angles and goals, right, and they shoot and the goalie blocks it, like, to the right or the left, did you come in an angle? Mm-hmm. If it's a simple pass, they're not getting them, dude. Right, because it's the right pass.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, but it takes you to be aware of what your vision is. If you're honing in on goals, 9 times out of 10, your vision is what you see here. Kenny's vision is there because he's looking at his peripheral vision
peripheral
here.
Vision.
So he's taking in more. His brain's taking in more than this thing here. Now, how many times have you seen forwards going through and he'll shoot and the goalie will save it and automatically, in 9 times out of 10, you should have... Why'd you not square it? Why'd you not pass that ball?
Mm.
And then he'll look and he'll go, oh, I never seen you.
Mm.
Now, 9 times out of 10, they do see you.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll not pass to you. Right? Because they're glory hunters. All forwards are nearly, all players are glory hunters.
Mm.
But there comes a time when you must do the right thing. And the good thing about Kenny, he would do the right thing 99.9% of the time. That's what made him a great player.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made him a great player. If he thought he could score, he would try it.
Mm-hmm.
If he thought it was going to be dodgy, but it was an easier one,
he would let off.
Because if it happened in reverse, you would expect to do the same to him.
Mm-hmm.
If you were through and you were an angle and you seen him free, you pass the ball on him, and that's the way it should be. But what happens is, you get guys who are thinking, well, I'm not passing, I don't like him, I'm not passing to him. Mm-hmm. And it does happen,
mm-hmm.
right? And you say, well, why are you shitting? Now, I played with a guy down in Blackburn. You'll know a boy called John Radford.
With Arsenal?
Aye. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I played up front with Raddy for a year, and he was a right good player. We had a boy called, you had a boy called John Wagstaff?
Oh,
he was at the great Wolverhampton team, left winger. He's one of the best players I've ever seen. But Waggy, John Radford was a typical Yorkshire man, even though he played all his time in London. And he was a smashing lad. I got him really well. And we had a little boy, a little right winger called Noel Brotherston. Noel was bald when he was about 18, looked to be 40. I thought he was an experienced guy. He was 18, right? Now, Noel was a real good player. But what he did was, he used to go by fullbacks and get to the byline, and instead of crossing the ball, he'd cut back in and hit it on his left foot. By that time, Raddy and I would make our runs, and it used to drive John Radford nuts, right? And he says to you, and Noel was the quietest guy you would meet. Smashing lad. And he came in at half time and he went like that. You little Irish, whatever it may be, right? And he says, if you go by that fullback again and you don't cross that ball, and he says, I'm going to batter you. And Noel was like that, head down, right? 10 minutes into the second half, goes by the fullback, gets to the byline, cuts inside. Crosses over his left foot, Raddy started chasing him up the park. Chased him all the way up to the top corner and got him. He was standing with his hand round his throat like that, throttling him. It was unbelievable. But that's the kind of thing that drives you nuts. Ken, he's done everything right. We've made our runs. If you put the ball into an area, we've got a chance. But the minute he stops and comes back, we're beat. The two forwards we'd beat.
So, 1977, you're approaching your peak. A lot of good things were happening at that point. The first thing is, you scored the goal that won his league at Easter Road.
Yeah.
And it's really sad to this day that we can't yet to appreciate it. It was Tom Hart when you let the TV in.
Well, it'd been that, it was the third year in a row, innit?
It's a 3 or 4, I think it was.
3 or 4. Yeah. Rangers the year before, and us the year before that.
Aye.
And Tom Hart wouldn't let it. Because we were everywhere, you had. But to be fair, we should have won it on the Wednesday.
Motherwell.
We actually pummeled Motherwell and we drew 3 each. So we just needed a point there. But I can remember the goal. I mean, I can remember Ronnie hitting the bar and the ball going away across to the right hand side and Alfie crossing it and me volleying it in. But that was just a relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were like that through the game, I think. I don't know why, because we only needed a point, I think, at that point.
That's right, a draw. Only needed a draw on the Wednesday, we get back 3.
Okay, aye, unbelievable.
But it was going, because I was near Easter Road that day, and not to see the TV and be deprived of it, and all that. And for Hart to make a stand against TV in that game was just bad.
It was sour grapes, to be
honest.
Okay, I mean, the thing is that you couldn't script that. Alright, it's just been 3 year or 4 year in the trot that it's going to go to Hibernian, like me. But the thing at the end of the day, what he should have been thinking about is how many people's got to turn up to the game, the television's going to be there, how much money are we going to make?
Mm-hmm.
Right, win or lose, it doesn't really affect Hibs anyway, right? So what it doesn't make any difference whether it's us or Rangers or Dundee or Aberdeen who's winning it at your ground. It's just the way it's turned out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just thought it was really, really bad.
There was a rumour at the time that first of all, he deprived you of the opportunity of looking back at it.
Absolutely.
Deprived you of the opportunity of seeing it. A thousand other Celtic fans. But there was a rumour at the time that Pat Stanton had been given a free transfer, a swap deal, with McNamara at the beginning of the season. And apparently he wasn't happy that Stanton was coming back and this was going to be his big day. So in some ways he set out to spoil it for Pat, which was mean-spirited.
But see, I think that's mean, man. Would you think how many years that Pat Stanton gave to Hibernian Football Club? Now, Pat Stanton was a fantastic player.
Post-Warrior's probably the best ever player.
He's unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, he did absolutely brilliant for us.
Mm.
Brilliant. He made Ronnie McDonald the best centre-half in Scotland. Ronnie McDonald got his so many caps, like 4 or 5 caps. And a big hand there was for Pat Stanton because he knew that if he ever missed a ball or a forward beat him, Pat would get it. And 9 times out of 10 he would. Any ball that he missed, which was very few because Big Roddy was absolutely majestic in the air, or if he scuffed a ball or someone got played at the top, he knew Pat would get it. And he got it.
He was the old-fashioned sweeper. He just swept up at the back. Great stuff.
See, Pat was another one who was miles in front of everybody up here. I mean, Pat's a joker and a bit laughing and this kind of carrying, but on the park, he was a hardy bit of stuff. He was harder than you thought. I mind talking to a guy, I can't mind his name now. He used to play outside right for Kilmarnock, and he went down and he was playing for Preston or something. Was it McCullough?
McCullough's quite a close
county. That's right, and he came back up. And he was a hardy bit of stuff.
He was a hardy bit of stuff,
and Pat and him went 50-50 at Kilmarnock. And Pat went through him. And I thought, oh, you know, goodness, yeah, again. I mean, and I thought Pat was a nice guy. And because the way McCullough didn't anticipate it, but Pat hurt him. And I was speaking to him after the game because I knew him when I was down in England, and he was saying, well, what was that? He said, I didn't know you had that in him. I said, to be perfectly honest, he had neither did that. Again, and I've played with him for a year and a bit, like, yeah, but yeah, I'm like, look after yourself.
So after we won the league at Easter Road, a week or two later, you get your first cap for Scotland.
Aye.
And that beggars the famous quiz question, which Scotland player scored in his debut before he kicked a ball?
Aye. It was just one of these things that, I mean, timing for me was actually quite bad because it was Wally Orman's last game. And the after that year, they'd done away with under-23s. They went to under-21 and I was 22. And you're like, oh, for goodness sake, because I'm thinking to myself, I had 7 caps, I think, with under-23s. And I liked, because a lot of the older ones, the so-called big, the Joe Jordan, they were getting older. But they didn't like playing in the 23s, or didn't they want to play in the first year. Fair enough, I'd play anywhere. For Scotland jersey, I'd play anywhere. And it was, what was I talking about there?
Sweden goal.
Oh, aye. It was Wally Orman's last game, and I was involved with the squad, and We were at Hampden for a few days doing at Largs in the skinny car, and it was brilliant. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought, I don't know if I'm going to go on here, because it's getting on a bit, and it was only about half an hour to go, and then it was like 20 minutes, 25 minutes. And I go, 20 minutes. And then I went on for Ronnie, and it was just like Roy Robertson. I jogged on to the middle of the park. Didn't run on, can he jog down to the middle of the park? We had the ball on the right wing. To throw in, I think Sandy Jardin took it, got it back, got played in behind the fullback, hit this great curling ball at the far post. The ball's bounced out, dive into the back post, and he did it in, first touch. And you couldn't get a better start.
That must have been some feeling.
Well, it was. I mean, the thing at the end of the day, it was, you've scored. It's every schoolboy or every boy's dream to play a hand in and score a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at the Celtic end, which was fantastic. But I missed a couple of snips after that. I missed two actually that I really should have scored. I should have walked off there with a hat-trick, which would have been more impressive. And Mr. Steen was at the game. So we went and got showered and changed, and I've come back out. And I'm walking along the corridor, and I'm feeling quite pleased with myself, I'm scored the goal and this kind of carry on. And he's walking towards me, he just looked at me and went, did okay, should have had a hat trick, and went behind me, just kept walking, and I went, aye, cheers, Gaffer. And so you went for being out there, kind of.
It was a bad boot that night, because only just missed a cup final.
That's right.
So that was probably the reason why he was in the huff. Because I remember that at the time, it wasn't a long term injury, but it was enough to keep him out for a week or two, and it was a shame he missed out on a medal.
His ankle injury, I think, tore some of his ligaments.
He wasn't a guy who was injured very much from Ronnie, played all the way through it.
You scored some goals, Ronnie.
Oh, aye. That's easy. He scored 26.
See when he went
down
to Barnsley? Alan Clark was the manager of Barnsley at the time, and Alan Clark had signed him. And Alan Clark says to him, I don't know you at all, son. I said, I'm only got a new record. And he says, well, I'll tell you what it is. He says, I know you've scored a lot of goals. He says, if you score 50, he gave him a 2-year contract. If you score me 15 goals this season, I'll rip it up and you'll start, you and I will negotiate
a new one.
He had 15 goals with Christmas. And he got a 3-year contract off him.
Ronnie was a better player than Barnsley before. So he was, circumstances dictated that, but you scored 2 goals in the semi final against Dundee.
Yes.
It goes into the Scottish Cup final against Rangers, the one that Andy scored a penalty.
Aye.
I don't know if you remember, but you had 2 good chances that day.
2 snaps, I should have scored.
One, you were unlucky, you placed it by the post.
Aye.
And the other one, Big Jackson cleared it off.
That was a funny one, because about 2 seconds before it, John Gregg and I were standing in the halfway line, and he said to me, see if this ball gets kicked up the park, Joe. He goes, it'll be a good race between you and me. And I felt he says to him, I'll not be able to race, I'll be on my knees. Because you see that he actually tried to do me when I poked the ball by him, but I've actually ridden the tackle, God knows how it. But what happens is, when you go through him one and one, there's all these things going through your mind, because the earlier you hit the ball, the more chance of what you score, right? But it all depends on your last touch. If your last touch is too far, you're too close to the goalie. If it's not far enough, right, you can actually want to go round them, right? So I'm going up there, and you've only got, you're thinking, I'm thinking to myself, hit it. But what he did, the goalie, he came out and went really big, and I couldn't see any of the goals, right? So what I was going to do, I was going to go by him on the right, but he chose the right way. I went there and then went there, and as I went there, he's gone. And he's going to get the ball. I know he's going to get the ball, right? So as the ball's there, I've just poked it. And I've dinked the air on him, and I thought, that's in. And it wasn't until I fell down and I looked up and I knew it was running by the post. I knew it. I just could see where it was. And I thought, you bastard. I couldn't believe I had missed it, because usually I'm not too bad on one-on-ones. I can usually read the goalies. That because that would have made a big difference at that end. But only went by the post.
Well, the sad thing is, it was one of the games. We won 1-0. Glad we won, but but 1-0 didn't do justice.
And
if it had been 2 or even 3-0, it'd have been merit or flight, because he hit the banner last month.
That's right. Because the one that the goalie saved on the line was, we Dolly crossed it, I think, or Danny's crossed it for the right, and Paul Wilson's had an almighty swing at it and missed it. And I was just lucky I was standing behind him, and it hit me on the shin and it just dropped down deep. But when I looked up, the goalie?
Kennedy.
Sure, Kennedy was right in the middle of the goals. Sandy Jardine was on there, and I think it was Alan McDonald or somebody was on that post, and I couldn't see any of the goals.
Mm-hmm.
All the goals was covered. And I think it was Colin Jackson or John Gregg was coming towards me, and I thought, he didn't hit it.
Mm.
Hope for the best. And as I hit it, the goalie saved it, but he shoved it on to, I think it was Sandy Jardine on the line, and it's kind of bobbled the boot and went out. And then, hands on head, and you're like, yeah, it's another chance you go. But I couldn't see any of the goals. All the goals, as far as I could see, was covered.
So it's summer of 77, things are looking good. And as a boy, I remember thinking at the time, we're going to have a right good crack at this European Cup. Because, you know, Alfie Conn's in there, you're in there, Pat Stanton's in there, still get Kenny and Danny at their peak. And then Kerry goes, well, first of all, the team goes on a tour of Australia.
Aye.
Right, and I spoke to you before about this,
and
you didn't get a game in the tour.
No.
Which is unusual because you were the top scorer in the previous season.
I played 20 minutes.
So what was the thinking behind that? Did you get an explanation?
No, right, big job didn't give you explanations, you just didn't. But we played 4 games. I played 4 games and I played 20 minutes. And I played 20 minutes against Red Star Belgrade and we were 3-0 in. And eventually we beat 3-1. But I think what happened was I went in there and I was top goal scorer, 27 goals, and this kind of carrier. But I think what he was looking for was actually kind of pace. And I just didn't have pace. So he played wee Doyle up front and he played Paul Wilson up front because they were quick. And the time that we beat Red Star, he played Big Shuggy up front as a big hangman, target man. And they won, so.
Did you ever get an explanation why you were getting left out? No. Was it just a case of you know, the team, that's it?
No, that's it.
Because that was weird.
Team's big, that's it.
So when we come back and Kerry's away, did you know before you went in the Australian trip he was leaving? Or
yes.
Was this, you did know?
But everybody knew. And I'll tell you when we found out, when we were on the bus going to the airport.
Because he wasn't on it?
Because he wasn't on it.
Mm.
But we knew at the end of the season he was telling us.
Did he?
Like, I'm off to Liverpool. I'm like, yeah, Liverpool, no one in UK. I mean, it's the usual thing, yeah. I'm going to see you at the season, lads. I'm going to be in Liverpool. Like, who's going to buy you? You're never going to.
So
Liverpool.
At the end of the season, it was all sorted, do you think?
Well, I think that, I don't know, I'm just thinking, but he definitely was mentioning it as on a passing that he was going to Liverpool. Right, but that happened all the time, Ken. Would you be really going to this time, Man United or Chelsea or whatever? Maybe no, I'm going to Liverpool. I said, yeah, he's going to buy you. Well, I can carry on. And then it was until we were actually on the bus and we were like,
Where's Kenny?
And then just then, big joke came on and we're like, Kenny's away to Liverpool.
Because as a fan, you were led to believe it right up until the night before that he signed for Liverpool. It was still in the balance, and Jock Stein appealed to him and pleaded with him and offered him money and all the rest of the stuff. But it's funny how you're not the first guy that's told me this. We knew Kenny was going, but the whole summer it was an open secret. But at the time, it wasn't public.
I think what had happened, I think that Liverpool were in obviously conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know contract wise, I didn't think if he was out of contract. Or he had Mearney's contract, I'm not very sure. But to be fair, the contract's back there, it wasn't worth the paper they were written. You signed for the club, you more or less signed for life.
Yes.
And they could just retain you for an extra pound if they wanted to. But I think at 400,000 was a lot of money. I mean, that was probably was a record for obviously for a Scottish player. And £400,000 was a lot of money.
Well, it was second only to Keegan.
So the thing is that did we take it serious? Probably no.
Mm.
Because it was definitely a surprise to me.
Mm.
But even though when you went, you started thinking, ah, that's why he was saying this, mm-hmm. and that. It all started to fit back in. Mm-hmm. Now, me personally, I just think that, I think, whether it's Liverpool or somebody's approached him and said, look, come down, blah, 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 Keegan's gone there, you come in, blah, 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 right? Maybe that happened, I don't know. The only thing I know is that there were rumours before the end of the season that he was going to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
And we all kind of knew that he had a chance to go to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
But didn't you think it would be at the start of the season?
So as a professional, would you be sorry to see him go?
Oh, definitely, aye. I mean, you're always happy for them because, like, you're always wanting to do well,
mm-hmm.
And show people, especially if you're a Scot, you will show people how good a player you are. But how can you replace Kenny Dalglish?
So the next season, if 76-77 season had been a high, then 77-78 season was a low. And the funny thing looking back now is that it wasn't for the one effort. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The players were signed hard enough that it was... I can't even remember a season there was so much bad luck. I mean, the first game of the season, Pat never played again after it.
Well, Kenny went to Liverpool.
Mm-hmm.
Danny came back for South America with John Dees.
Mm-hmm.
Danny McGrain. Danny never played nearly that whole year.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Stanton got a virus and he was out for the majority of the season. So mm-hmm. that was 3 of your best players.
And I'll forget a bad injury. Yeah.
So that was, mm-hmm. well, that was 4 of your best players gone.
Probably the least experienced ones as well.
And what happened to us? Big joke was no right. He wasn't well.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't well, right? And I think what happened was there was skinny rumblings going about the park. The park wasn't the same. And no disrespect to the guys who are mentioned here and that, like Ken, but a lot of the boys that he brought in were no in the same class. And that's being bitchy here, like enough. What was going out.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy, it wasn't the boy's fault, Ken. Like, I mean, the thing is that he needed to go and try and replace or bring in some of the kids. But, I mean, he brought in... I remember now.
He brought in guys like Ian McWilliams, Roy Kay.
But the boy for
John Dowie.
Aye. I felt sorry for John Dowie. I mean, John Dowie came all the way for Fulham, right? And his first game was Rangers at Ibrox.
I know.
He got destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
He'd only trained with
Fulham. He wasn't fit.
He brought big Frank Monroe. For Wolves. Mm-hmm. But Frank was 36 or something. Frank was a great player.
In his day.
Oh, aye. But I mean, it was just, we were just bad.
There was bad luck as well. I'm sure you remember the game at Ibrox, the New Year game. It's 1-0 for Rangers, the Celtic are pressing, and Paul Wilson played a lovely ball at the back post, and you're standing right underneath it, and you jumped up ready to. I thought you'd have scored.
Well, that would have scored my eyes shut.
Right, so 2-1's in your back, and you push right into the net. So the big roar goes up for the Celtic, and that's a penalty. You're lying in the net with your arms up, screaming for a penalty, the players. And John Gordon was a referee, and he played on and gave Rangers a bye kick. And as the Celtic players flooded round him, we looked up, well, for the Celtic end, we could see there was no defence.
Right.
It was Frank Monroe and Peter Latchford against five of them.
That's right.
And they were cute enough to play a couple of 1-2s round them. And the next thing, John Gregg's at an open goal for about 6 yards.
That's right.
And off it, we should have had a penalty.
Yeah.
The place went mental.
Well, mind after it, we wouldn't take the centre.
Well, he nearly had to come out and bejolt and try and get his up back to playing again.
Tom McAdam and I were up front that time, and every time Mr. Gordon put the ball in the centre, we kicked it off. Right? And he was going, you can't keep doing that. I says, well, we're not doing the centre. And he goes, lad, you'll need to start the game. I said, we're not starting the game. He said, and I went on, I must have went on for what? A good 5-10 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
A good 5 minutes anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I must have seen him to come out and say, yes, get that ball taken. So, okay, the gaffer shouts, he just there like, yeah. But it was just unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it. I mean, the fact that we all ran to the goalie. The ball came out from that side, I got shoved. I mean, Colin Jackson's put two hands at my back and shoved me in the net.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ball's there, I'm just ready to head it in. I mean, I can't even kind of close my eyes a minute, like, I could have my face a minute, because it was only about a yard out. Right? So we've all run up, and we're all around him. And he's like that, no, go away, go away. And he's like, yes, yes, yes. And we looked. Looked over and the boss was doing the halfway line.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's like, oh, I'm nowhere on the way back there. And he, like we said, it was Pat and the big man, the big Peter. And it was just an absolute joke. Mm. And they gave the go.
I know.
And we were like that. I mean, they were lucky. They were
so what looks to have been one each ended up 2-0. But that's an indication of the bad luck that we faced that season.
You know, that's the only game I got beat.
Against Rangers?
In all fun games. Mm-hmm. I think I played in 10.
Well, your last game, left Billy McNeil takes over. And were you injured at the beginning of the season?
Yes, I feel managed.
Because that was unfortunate.
So it was. The problem was that, I mean, it was a problem for me because once you're out, it's really difficult to get back.
Especially with a new manager.
Especially with a new manager. And what happened was that he bought a couple of players. He bought Tom McAdam Tom McAdam was already there. There wasn't that many players come in. But what happened was he wanted Tom McAdam to play up front instead of me. Now, I liked him. I've known Tom for years, and this can he carry him like. And I thought, Tom's a centre-half. He's not a centre-forward. Right? And he was playing. And what really annoyed me about it was I was playing in the reserve. Alfie and I were playing in the reserves all the time and scoring goals. I was scoring 3-4 goals in every reserve game. A goal here, 2 goals there, 3 goals there.
See, what puzzles me about letting you go was that you spent nearly that virtually that whole season complaining about not having a strike. Huh? And I'm thinking to myself, well, Lottie's were thinking, well, what did you let Joe Craig go for?
I went in the shell about what? September. Something about September or something. And I said to him, why am I not playing? And he says, well, I prefer Tom McAdam to yours. And I says, well, I'm on the way, and he went, fine, and just go. That's it.
And your last game against Rangers, there was a nice wee cameo. We were winning 2-0. And I've all got played in the jungle side towards the Celtic end. And you had big first Iceland after. And he tried to rugby tackle you, tried to wrestle you. And you wriggled clear. And as you wriggled clear, you looked up and squared the body big time, and Tam had a.
Scored
the goal. And I always remember the feeling of euphoria that day, because 2-1, you're always worried about them scoring. But you know, 3-1 with 5 minutes to go, they're not coming back now.
It was a brilliant, because I tell you what, there was a feral crowd at Parkhead that day. There's nothing like it. I mean, I say to players that when you leave Celtic Park, 9 times out of 10 you're on a downward spiral. I mean, you can go to big clubs in England, and I say this to my son, and even when we go on holiday now, I say, you can go anywhere in the world, and I mean anywhere, and you'll meet a Celtic supporter. Or you'll see somebody walking down the street with the hoops on. Anywhere. It doesn't matter. Okay? And they're that. I don't know. I mean, I ain't going to play in the European Cup in. Who were we?
Luxembourg.
Wednesday night in Luxembourg. 7:30 kickoff. And you walk out, and we're doing the warm up. Before the warm up, we get there about an hour and a half before the kickoff. And I walk in the park, hi Joe, hi, going across. And it's a busload for Fort William. There's 8 boys that come in a transit van for Fort William.
On the way to Luxembourg.
And I'm, because I was up there being one of the player of the year things, right? Mm-hmm. Maisel and I went up. And there was a boy, John, can you mind his name? And I goes, John, what are you doing? Oh, can you miss a game, Joe? See, I've not missed a game all year. He says, but it's Luxembourg on a Wednesday night. He goes, you're off your head. He goes, aye, but what was it? I goes, he says, give me a strip. He didn't say give me a strip. I think I gave him boots or something after, or a ball or something after, like, yeah. But that, Ken, that just shows you.
Well, you scored 2 that night. Huh?
It just shows you, Ken, these guys just didn't, Ken, they just go. It's just unbelievable.
What always puzzled me, right, I'm dying to ask you this, is when you left, right, and I mean, you were a good player with Partick Thistle, you've got a great record at Celtic, you're an internationalist. Why Blackburn Rovers? Because they weren't a great team at the time, they were the second tier. Did you have a better offer than Blackburn?
I'll tell you why I went to Blackburn Rovers. I had a few offers. I had one for Fulham, which I didn't particularly like. I'd got a really good gym for Shrewsbury, but Shrewsbury was a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Beautiful place. And to be fair, it was all German farmers who were on the board of directors. I mean, my wife had a job and they were giving me a house. And now when you go down there, I mean, they couldn't have been nice enough, like, But I went and watched one of the games and I went, don't know if I could play in that. And the reason I went to Blackburn Rovers was because it was a football park.
They did a tradition, didn't they?
It's a football park. Mm. See, when I walked down the park, it's a dirty, dingy old place. But I felt it. I could feel it. Again, when you go into a park and you think, this is a football, it's like going to Tynecastle to a certain extent. Again, when you go into places like that, it's like going to the old Celtic Park. I think the new Celtic Park has lost a bit of its character. But when you went into the old parks, you could feel. You could feel the ghosts, you could feel the people, and that's what I felt at Blackburn, even though they were toiling at that time. I felt that they were a footballing place. It was a footballing place. It wasn't a place that it was a lovely place. This is where it was a working man's place. It was dark, it was dingy, and I loved it. I liked it, and that's one of the reasons I signed for it. Money wise, it was okay. I mean, I was getting the same kind of money what I was at Celtic, but believe it or not. And because the money down south was actually quite good, but I enjoyed my 3 years down there. I enjoyed it, and what it does, that would be what, seven, eight seasons I would see up here. So you deal the circuits or the grounds, but when you go down south, you're not playing in any grounds.
So it's more excitement.
Well, if you think of the, I mean, our reserve league went for Birmingham. Right up to Newcastle.
Was it Central League one?
Aye. So if you were a kid, you were playing at Birmingham, Aston Villa, right? The two Manchesters, Liverpool, Everton, Newcastle,
Sunderland,
and then all round about us, you had all the local derbies, Bury, Burnley,
Bolton,
Oldham, and there's something another one else. But they were all just between about 10-15 minute drive. Preston.
That was a big one.
Oh, again, so you were playing one day, you'd maybe play, say, for argument's sake, Chelsea. Chelsea would come up with all the nutters, right? Smash about three trains on the way up, right? Police escorts all the way through, all your glasses, nooses, all butts. 10,000 that would come into you, like, and you'd go out and play, again, it'd be snot and blotters, and then something different. And then only when you get to the FA Cup, we played Liverpool in the fifth round of the FA Cup at Anfield, and Kenny, I've been against McCann and that, like, that's the year they won the European Cup. Aye, they did win the European Cup. Mine was the one, the other one Kenny scored, the boy Kenny, I'm not very sure. Anyway, we go there and the guys are saying, aye, wait till you get to the cop and the noise and this kind of carry on. So I'm out, Ken, then the warm up, and I'm looking and I'm thinking,
that's
no,
it.
It's not that noisy. Again, and you go out at the 3 o'clock and it's 7 o'clock and night game, and I wait to hear noise for the cop, and I'm going, oh, that's not noise. Yeah? I'm sitting in the changing room, can't hear anything. Yeah, I'm like, you sit at Ibrox at Park Heath, you think the ceiling's coming, you've got to drop off again, it's like the noise is deafening. And I'm like, I'm going, well, if that's the cop,
keep it.
They need to come up to Park Heath. If they want some noise, you know what I mean? Then they came what noise is about. And it was nice, but there was no hatred in it.
What about, do you regret leaving? Do you wish in hindsight that you'd have stuck out and said, I'm going to prove you wrong?
Yes.
Because
I think that's the thing with youth. Right. I think what happened was, I think that I didn't have anybody old enough to say to myself, to be fair, I had guys I could have waited and phoned, but what I really should have done, I just should have said, right, I'm just going to knuckle under, right, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm better now, and I'll get back in, because eventually I would have.
I would have gone back in.
But I think because you're young and you just think, no, I should be playing. When I'm playing, well, I'm gone then. And they call you bluff and you go, hey, all right, we'll go back for God. I didn't want to be here anyway. And it's slow to your away, you just think, what have you done? Yeah. And I really, really, really regret no just sticking in there, because not because that I wanted to prove, I just think it's a fantastic club. And it's not until you go away from it that you realise how good the club is. But more importantly, how big it is. Man, I still got people now, 40 years later, coming up to me somewhere, maybe in Portugal or Spain, and go, are you getting on, Joe? And that goal scored the Park Heath at Ibrox, Mind the Easter Road. That's 40 years ago.
I know.
It's unbelievable.
But I think what it proves is you've created a bit of history, you've remembered, which is nice.
I say to my son and I say to my wife, through my football career, I'm remembered more or less for two things. One thing, for the goal that I scored at Ibrox. Mm. And second, for the goal I scored at Hampden. Scotland. Now, if I remember for the two things, that would be me. Because there's a lot of better players than me that I remember for a lot of bad things, like missing a penalty, or getting sent off, or fighting here, or drugs, or women, or booze, or something like that. And if I remember for the two positive things, I'll take that.
Well, that brings us to a happy ending, Joe. As I said, when I was a boy, then it was a pleasure watching you.
Thank you.
And I know you've just retired, so on behalf of all the Celtic fans out there, a happy retirement to you, and thanks for the memories.
Well, it's been fantastic memories for me, Stevie. It's a thing that... the funny thing is, when you recall them, they feel like they're just like yesterday.
Mm.
They're that clear in your mind. But it's a fantastic club. I would never let anybody say anything bad about it. And because all the time that I was there, and it wasn't long enough, I have great memories of the place. I made a lot of great people in it. I scored a few goals, and if I've made some people happy, then I've done my job, and I'm quite happy with it.
Thanks very much, Joe.
No, Augustine, thank you, Bob.
Try to get up as quickly as possible after the game so you've more Celtic chat. We have the draw coming up this week for the final game for the qualifying for the Champions League, and then league game weekend, and then Kilmarnock midweek. But that's enough for me. We mostly have to chat along soon. But that was him, St. Anthony, with him, Joe Craig, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night.
Sun from up above, bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile, bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.